On today's Biz News Briefing, President Trump drops the F-bomb. Israel and Iran subvert the ceasefire. Paul Mashatile's lottery triad. The finance minister's political funding cabinet. And will Liam Jacobs regret his DA defection? Stay tuned.
This Biz News Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.
It's Wednesday, the 25th of June. I'm Stuart Lohman. From a cold, wet Cape Town to a fired up president, Donald Trump had some choice words for both Israel and Iran, accusing them of undermining his ceasefire. Let's take a look.
You said that Iran violated the peace agreement and the ceasefire agreement. Do you believe that Iran is still committed to the peace?
Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it too. Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I'd never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Trump's profane call-out of both Israel and Iran has sparked global reaction. European leaders are weighing in as fears grow the fragile ceasefire won't hold.
What do we hear, especially from our allies, about this ceasefire with which they had nothing to do?
Well, the president's certainly going to be met with two different viewpoints here in Europe. You have France's Emmanuel Macron coming out and saying he thinks the U.S. strikes on Iran were illegal, even though he does believe and agrees with the United States that Iran should never have a nuclear weapon. And then you have the new German chancellor who said that what Israel did was, quote, the dirty work when it comes to the strikes on Iran, and basically saying, why should we in Germany criticize Israel or the U.S. for these strikes? So those are going to be two of the different viewpoints the president is met with. We should note, as the president is making his way here to The Hague from Washington, D.C., briefing reporters very early this morning, he seems incredibly frustrated, so much that he used an expletive when he was talking about the fact that he does not think that these two countries, Iran and Israel, have been fighting for so long and so hard, know what they're doing. He did tweet, though, that Israel will not be sending more strikes. He is trying to make sure that this ceasefire that is very fragile stays put. But that is why this conflict in the region is really going to overshadow the summit, because it is vulnerable, this ceasefire, and there's a lot of concern that potentially this could still be met with more tit-for-tat missiles between these two countries in potentially weeks to come, even if this is the start of the end of what we've seen play out over the course of the last nearly 2 weeks.
I want to meditate a little bit more on that frustration that we've seen from President Donald Trump, because he also is publicly frustrated with Israel as well. Of course, as you mentioned, he's since tweeted that, tensions will cool, at least when it comes to Israel's side. We also heard from the PM office over there saying that Israel will abstain from further strikes. But it's not often that we see Donald Trump publicly express frustration with Israel to this degree.
Yes, he's frustrated with Israel, and I believe this would stem from the fact that Israel said that Iran breached the ceasefire. So the Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz came out and said the IDF will now retaliate. And what Trump was saying there is that he doesn't want to see that retaliation, and he wants their planes to come back home. But this was an interesting dialogue from the president this morning, because he wasn't just lashing out at the Iranian regime. He was also lashing out over what is going on in Israel, blaming both of these countries to be in breach of the ceasefire that he really forced together over the course of the past 24 hours.
Despite this, the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Dannon, says the ceasefire was achieved with strength and clarity, warning any violation by Iran will be met with force.
Since the launch of Operation Riding Lion, Israel has walked with clarity and purpose to remove a double existential threat, both the nuclear threat and the threat of the Iranian regime's ballistic missile capabilities. The IDF achieved complete air superiority over Iran, struck a severe blow to Iran's military leadership, and dismantled dozens of the regime's key strategic sites. Our forces acted with precision, resolve, and restraint. These threats no longer hang over the people of Israel as they did just a few days ago. In full coordination with President Trump, Israel has agreed to a ceasefire. We thank the United States for its support and for its critical role in helping remove the Iranian nuclear threat. Last night, four innocent civilians were murdered in Be'er Sheva by Iran. Their tragic deaths are a reminder of the evil we faced. My friends, Israel is a peaceful nation. We pray for peace three times a day, but let no one mistake our desire for peace as a weakness. Any violation of the ceasefire and any threat against our people will be met with a forceful response. We have demonstrated that we can and will act to defend our people against any threat. We will do so with overwhelming strength and moral clarity. We have seen the seismic impact of the Abraham Accords. Today, I have no doubt that the leadership Israel displayed in recent days will enable more countries to join the path of normalization. Israel has proven that it can confront the most serious threats in the region and that we will never hesitate to defend our future.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
The DA's Toby Chance says Deputy President Paul Mashatile's links to the new lotto license raised red flags that Trade and Industry Minister Parks Tau missed, calling it a textbook case of state capture.
The Deputy President Paul Mashatile has had a history of essentially associations with businesses that he doesn't have a direct interest in himself, but through family members and friends, he is obtaining financial benefit. And, you know, he has not put himself through a lifestyle audit. And it's certainly the case that the lavish lifestyle that he leads cannot be, paid for out of a deputy president's salary. So, the DA laid corruption charges against the deputy president over a year ago. These are still pending. And I think that the public deserves to have answers. What I can say is that the DA had information which we believe was sufficient to lay corruption charges against the deputy president on the basis of, as I said, his association with dubious individuals, including Mr. Sodhi, who, as you recall, has received multitudinous tenders from the government of various sorts, including the asbestos tender in the Free State, tenders from the Shwani municipality, and the close association the deputy president has with him, amongst other people, including his son-in-law, who has a supposedly 37 million rand house in Waterfall, which Mr. Mashatile lives in. We don't know where that money came from either to buy the house. So there are lots of unanswered questions, and unfortunately, it does go to the heart of, the state capture issue, using familial connections to lay your hands on valuable state assets to benefit your friends and family.
Mm, and wasn't there a businessman with him in Paris recently linked to this lotto company?
Two businessmen, actually, yes. The other shareholder of Bellemont Gaming, the other one being, of course, his sister-in-law, Kumo Bogatsu. Her business partner, Moses Tembi, was with the deputy president in Paris in May, as well as Sandile Zungu, who is a director of Sizikai Holdings. So between the three of them, it's a nice little triad, which links. If you look at the Abba Bongani article, there's a nice little diagram which shows the relationship between those people and the sort of dotted lines between the different institutions, the different companies, and the different individuals. And unfortunately, it's a classic case yet again of how state capture and corruption works. It's a dubious connection between politicians, business people, and public officials, which has led to the downfall of so many of our institutions.
The Zonda Commission has fallen on deaf ears. DA youth leader Ndepiwe Olayi says that MP Liam Jacobs' defection to the Patriotic Alliance is a mistake, warning he may soon regret the move.
Yes, defections don't always turn out very well, as we have seen with Floyd Shivambu's defection from the Economic Freedom Fighters to MK. But obviously, you would not want to venture a prediction at this stage as to how this will turn out for Liam.
Indeed, indeed. And to be very honest, he speaks about going home and being free. And we all know that type of organizations. I engage a lot with a lot of political organizations. It's the nature of politics that you constantly have to understand the dynamics around. And if he thinks that that organization itself is going to be truly allowed to express itself, there's another thing coming, where a leader decides to go on a live and say, come up, you are fired. So those type of so-called democracies are not something that he perhaps is aware of. And in the DA itself, we're a truly democratic organization. And he's a perfect example of that, of how he raised the rose through the ranks. And I think he will come to regret that decision. I, for one, will not be there to welcome him when he decides to come back. And this is, unfortunately, a trend amongst individuals who perhaps were not ready to be given those many responsibilities at the time. And politics attracts extremes of individuals. And the type of extreme that was attracted via him was an individual perhaps that had an overinflated sense of importance. Because in the Democratic Alliance, we're cruising very nicely without the Liam Jacobs. We are institutionalized. We have strong young people in the party coming up the ranks, capable leaders that have been in the structures of the organization, and activists that actually have a heart day in, day out, doing door-to-door canvassing for the organization. So we are cruising very nicely.
Do you think his defection will have an impact on results in upcoming by-elections?
I see they're working very hard in Mosselbay, and I see they're working very hard in Nelson Mandela Bay. The thing about by-elections, it's not the same as national government elections. Firstly, the turnout is much lower. Secondly, it's also the people's excitement about the elections is not as much. And it's a funny phenomenon. People think, if you can look at the Economic Freedom Front, if you go to Twitter in the previous elections, you'd think the EFF was going to win the elections. And you'll think the EFF is probably the leading party in South Africa. But the results shock people. So when you have TikTokers coming and parading as leaders and thinking they're going to change the will of the people, you have another thing coming, because we understand the power of social media, but the will of the people and the plight of the people on the ground is a different reflection, particularly how social media handles information on a day-in, day-out basis, influenced by a number of factors.
Turning our attention to political party funding and Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana's proposal for full state funding. UIMM leader Neil De Beer blasted it, calling it Dorf moment number two.
And now the finance minister wants full public funding for all political parties.
Yeah, he's definitely gone into the cabinet, and it's not the political cabinet. He's gone into the drink cabinet. The only reason why a person would get up at a IEC meeting about funding and bring up a suggestion like this is because you are critically, in an Afrikaanse woord, dof. Jy is dof. This is the second dof moment of Enoch Godongwana. in the aspect of 1 year. Now, look, I don't know. We all have blonde and dumb moments. I don't know if it's politically correct to say blonde anymore, but you know what they say about redheads. So the problem that we've got now, Chris, is this is his second doff moment. The first one was VAT. And he got so on his mur that he decided, no, he's not going to do that. So he puts it right. And here we go. Ching, ching, doff moment number two. He says that in his opinion, government must fund political parties because they are becoming, let's call it, targets for influence of private business and individuals. Hey, that's the notebook of definition of ANC. When you look at ANC in the Oxford Dictionary, it spells out a party multiply owned, paid for, bribed, and corrupted by private individuals and companies. Gupta. So he now says, no. The way we're going to get away from this is ensure that government funds political parties so that it can be independent. You can tell me what you want. My afval is afval and skaapkop is skaapkop. So I don't know, Chris. The fact that a minister of finance can sit in a country that is seen as one of the most corrupt is now going to say, let government fund you and you'll stop being corrupt and you'll be independent thinking. I think it was a late night bribe, and I think there was a lot of yeast involved in a lot of beer. I don't know if he drinks alcohol. If he doesn't, dan het hy 'n disprint vasgebyt. But this is not normal and cannot be understood by people like us. The last thing that you want is government to interfere in the independence of a democracy, which they are already doing, Chris. And then he ends off by saying that he's also very worried that the IEC is starting to become involved in politics, like investigating transgressions of political parties. I don't know. This is Cuckoo La La Land. He lives in his own land, and you know what is the worst? He runs our money, and that should be absolutely scary to us.
You can watch the full Sunday show on BizNews TV on YouTube. And that's it for today's show. A big thanks to the BizNews production team. From me, Stuart Lohman, stay warm, and until next time.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.